Is it enough to just have a rescue tug in Dutch Harbor, or do we also need to have one out in ADAC?
The vessel Golden Seas is underway to safety. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, the 6th of December. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Sean Parnell officially starts his first full term as governor.
This is your state. These are your resources. Be bold. Be innovative. Make a difference. We're Alaskans. That's what we do.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com.
Governor Sean Parnell today began the term of office to which he was elected last month. He took the oath of office in Juneau, calling on Alaskans to work with him to make the state a better place. APRN's Dave Donaldson was there.
The hour-long ceremony showcased Alaska, its native heritage, and its beauty, without any fanfare, reflecting the subdued approach that's become trademark for Sean Parnell. After taking the oath of office, the governor was ready to start the job he earned on his own, saying he gives thanks for the work ahead. Parnell began with a brief reference to the economy, energy, and education, and as he has often done since ascending to the office a year and a half ago, he staked out his limits on defending Alaska's rights. But inaugural addresses are designed to set a tone. They're not about continuing campaign debating points. And Parnell called for unity, with the bulk of his talk about the people of the state.
Our objective is far more than mere economic growth. Our vision is about our people. Because happiness cannot be measured in dollars. Today, too many Alaskans live in fear. Too many suffer from domestic violence and sexual assault. And too many Alaskan families know despair and hopelessness. In our vision, Alaskans live free of fear. Alaskans live every day with hope and opportunity in view.
And Parnell spoke about the value of respect.
Every person carries the spark of dignity ignited by our Maker. Embracing respect for ourselves and respecting others empowers us. It frees us from fear so we can act. Because we're Alaskans. That's what we do.
The governor said he and his own administration are not alone, saying he's looking for greatness by bringing people together.
Alaskans, set your hand and face to Alaska's future. Run with me to take responsibility for it. This is your state. These are your resources. Be bold. Be innovative. Make a difference. We're Alaskans. That's what we do. Thank you, and God bless.
Before Parnell's address, the state's new Lieutenant Governor, Meade Treadwell, also asked for the people of the state to work for the common good, tying in his own personal background with former Governor Wally Hickel.
Let us all give our energy to make Alaska a better place. I'm ready to give it all I've got, and we've got to put Alaska first.
I'm Dave Donaldson in Juneau.
The disabled tanker Golden Seas connected with Coast Guard vessels over the weekend and is now being towed to Dutch Harbor for repairs. The tanker is expected to arrive tomorrow. The Golden Seas experienced a turbocharger failure on December 3rd while 70 miles north of ADAC, causing the vessel to lose power and go adrift. The ship was transporting canola seeds from Canada to the United Arab Emirates and is also carrying about a 500,000 gallons of oil and diesel fuel. Because of the poor weather and the vessel's proximity to shore, there was initial concern that the vessel could run aground and cause an oil spill. The Golden Seas regained limited power on Friday, allowing the vessel to move away from shoreline at a speed of 3 knots. On Saturday, the Shell-operated icebreaker Tor Viking reached the Golden Seas and was able to connect a tow line to the vessel. The Tor Viking had been moored in Dutch Harbor as part of Shell's preparation for exploratory drilling in the Beaufort Sea. Normally, the nearest available ocean-going tugs to the region are in Seattle, and it can take more than a week for them to travel out to the Aleutian Islands. Gary Folley is with the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation, and he says the lack of ocean-going tugs on such a popular shipping route is an issue of concern for the state.
Is it enough to just have a rescue tug in Dutch Harbor, or do we also need to have one out in ADAC or perhaps even in other places?
Right now, the city of Unalaska is coordinating with the Coast Guard and Shell Oil to bring the disabled vessel into Captain's Bay and to limit disruption to other vessel operations. On Saturday afternoon, local officials and representatives from the shipping industry met at a city hall for a briefing on the Golden Sea's status. Lieutenant Mark Labert with the Coast Guard's Unalaska Marine Safety Detachment led the meeting.
We have the current situation and then the plan situation that goes back now into a port of refuge, because we are going to start looking at what tugs we have available and if she is going to plan on going dead ship, you know, what that does for our operations here commercially and what that's going to mean for us.
Repairs to the Golden Seas are expected to take a week or more. The U.S. Congress and the White House are trying to hammer out a deal that would extend the Bush-era tax cuts for all income brackets temporarily in exchange for extending unemployment benefits. Republicans want the tax cuts kept across the board, but Democrats are fighting them, saying the country can't afford to keep the cuts for the wealthiest Americans. But the Democrats do want long-term unemployment benefits extended, and so are at the bargaining table. APRN's Libby Casey reports.
Senator Lisa Murkowski joined with other Republicans on Saturday to shoot down two middle-class tax cut proposals. One would have extended the Bush-era tax cuts for couples who make up to $250,000, and the other would have let taxes rise only on Americans making more than $1 million. But Republicans want to extend the tax cuts for all brackets, including the wealthiest Americans. Democrats pushed taking the votes to get Republicans on the record. Senator Murkowski's office put out a statement saying the proposals would have amounted to a, quote, massive tax increase that would hurt small businesses. She says the weakened economy makes it a bad time to bump up any taxes, and she wants to see a vote on extending all the cuts. The tax cuts were originally designed to expire at the end of this year, and unless Congress acts, they will do so. Alaska Senator Mark Begich sided with Democrats and voted for the middle-class tax cut extensions. He especially likes the plan to let taxes go up for people who make over $1 million and says, as a business owner himself, he doesn't think that increase would hurt the small business community.
So it's not a question of how long to extend these things. It's who will benefit from the right public policy discussion and decisions. Small business folks benefit. And, you know, I understand the other side doesn't like the 250,000 and under. So a lot of us on this side, moderates, said, well, why not try something a little different? Let's up it a little bit. Let's get to the $1 million threshold because it covers basically everybody except the millionaire and billionaire club. That seemed reasonable.
Begich and other Democrats say the line has to be drawn because extending the tax cuts will increase the already perilous national debt. The House passed a bill last week that would extend the middle-class tax cuts, but without Senate approval, it's dead in the water. Alaska Congressman Don Young voted with other Republicans against it. The White House is currently working with a bipartisan group on a plan that could extend all the tax cuts for a couple of years, which Republicans want, and at the same time extend unemployment benefits, which Democrats want. Long-term unemployment benefits expired last week. In Washington, I'm Libby Casey.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Anchorage police continue the search for a woman's captors.
There's no indication that she knew who these people were, but for some reason she was targeted.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alaska Business Monthly Magazine, providing insight on statewide business and government issues. There's more information online at akbizmag.com.
Anchorage detectives are still working to uncover why a young woman was grabbed from a parking lot late last Tuesday night, bound and held overnight. She escaped when her abductors moved her the next day. Because there was a hood over her head for most of her time in captivity, she could give investigators little to go on for describing her abductors. Lieutenant Dave Parker with the APD says Special Victim Unit detectives are not releasing much information, but they don't believe it was a random act.
Now, that's not to say
that it is or is not a stranger abduction. There's no indication that she knew who these people were, okay? But for some reason, she was targeted, and it is not considered to be a random act, like there's somebody walking down the street, let's grab that person.
Parker says the woman told detectives she thought the minivan she escaped from was gray or light gold in color, and one of her abductors was a white male in his 30s. Anchorage police are asking the public to contact them if they saw the woman struggle with the men in a Spenard area apartment parking lot on Tuesday night or saw her jump from the van on Wednesday afternoon and escape to a local business. While much of the attention at tomorrow night's Anchorage Assembly meeting will be on the municipal budget, two other items are on the agenda that could produce some future fireworks, one literally and another politically. KSKA's Len Anderson has more.
The former arises as an ordinance sponsored by Chair Dick Traney and calls for a New Year's Eve lifting on the city's firework ban.
It only makes sense. People from Anchorage go to Houston, buy their fireworks, bring them to Anchorage, rush them out, light them, run back in the house so they can't be seen by a police officer. So just knock it off and let the people use fireworks legally for one day of the year for a few hours. I doubt if anything outside is going to burn.
Traney's proposal would allow the discharge of saleable fireworks under Alaska law within municipal boundaries from 7:30 p.m. December 31st until 1:30 a.m. January 1st. Traney proposed a similar ordinance 3 years ago. It was defeated by a split vote, not so much because of fire danger, but over safety concerns for children and impaired adult New Year's celebrants. But then, following the Anchorage Assembly's rejection, Wasilla adopted a New Year's Eve fireworks ordinance.
They just took the same verbiage and changed the name who's introducing it. Since I got it passed there, I thought I'd try it down here in Anchorage again.
The second ordinance introduced and likely to produce assembly sparks, plus some heated community conversation, asked to put a ballot measure before the voters amending the municipal charter to allow a simple majority approval of a sales tax. The charter currently requires a supermajority of 60%, a target that's proven impossibly high in past sales tax votes. Assemblymember Chris Birch feels he may have the key to eventually winning a simple majority of voters should a sales tax reappear on the ballot.
The charter amendment that we hope to bring to the voters next spring would provide them an opportunity to offset property taxes on a dollar-for-dollar basis sales tax revenues that could potentially be passed.
Birch's proposed charter change would allow simple majority of approval of a municipal sales tax only if all tax revenues collected went to property tax relief. If Birch's simple majority charter change wins assembly approval and subsequent voter backing next April, Birch expects that a sales tax ballot measure offering a dollar-for-dollar reduction in business and residential property taxes will eventually appear.
I think sales tax basically offers a diversification option. I know the Chamber of Commerce is keenly interested in looking at diversifying the property tax base, so all the burden is not fully borne by the property owners.
Neither Traney nor Birch are certain of what sort of reception their two proposed ordinances will receive from their assembly colleagues, but they'll soon find out. The public hearings for both ordinances are scheduled for tomorrow evening's Anchorage Assembly meeting. In Anchorage, this is Len Anderson.
The State Department of Transportation is proposing to make the Bethel Airport a 24/7 operation. KYUK's Shane Iverson talked with Bethel Airport staff last week and has the story.
Thursday night dropped wet, heavy snow on Bethel. At the airport, all available DOT staff is clearing the runways. Rosalind Hoffman is the only worker not operating a vehicle. She's in the office. Hoffman says they were able to clear the big runway for the morning flights.
The number one priority is the big runway. That makes the jets accessible to land.
Those jets bring in people and cargo, usually from Anchorage. Meanwhile, passengers and freight waiting to travel to villages on smaller airplanes will wait while the smaller runways are cleared.
On a snowy day, you know, their flights could get delayed.
The staff will go on to clear the smaller runways and shoulders and parking areas. It's a busy morning of work. The Bethel Airport is the second busiest airport in all of Alaska, according to recent information compiled by the state's DOT. Roger Weatherall is the department's chief communications officer.
The Bethel Airport conducts more than 120,000 flights annually, carrying about 300,000 passengers every year.
The Department of Transportation is proposing a plan aimed at increasing the reliability of the airport. They want to add staff and maintenance to turn the airport into an all-hours airport.
The need is there, and if we can provide that, then certainly that would bring great benefit to the people of the region.
The Department of Transportation estimates the cost of the change to be about $900,000. That's the request they recently submitted to the Office of Management and Budget.
A primary concern of safety and health-related issues, such as medevacs. And if there are medevacs occurring in the middle of the night, then you need to have access to clear and safe runways.
Weatherall says the request has heavy support from the airline industry.
The airport is open 24 hours, 7 days a week. It offers, you know, air carriers the opportunity to expand their operations as well.
The proposal will be considered in the upcoming legislative session, which will start January the 18th. I'm Shane Iverson.
Alaska Airlines passengers flying above Southeast Alaska will have access now to wireless internet, but travelers on most flights stopping in the region will not have the service until next year. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
The Seattle-based carrier just announced that the ground part of the system is installed and functioning in Southeast. It turned on a similar system earlier this fall for flights between Anchorage and Fairbanks. But Alaska Airlines spokesman Chase Craig says some jets are not yet equipped.
Those that are flying the nonstops from Anchorage and Fairbanks to Seattle, which are predominantly the aircraft that are outfitted, will enjoy the service. It's the aircraft that are going between Anchorage and Juneau and at other locations in Southeast Alaska, making those short hops that are not currently outfitted.
Most of those planes will get the necessary gear early next year. Craig says combi aircraft, which carry passengers and freight, will not be equipped. Alaska Airlines is working with a company called AirCell to provide what it calls GoGo in-flight Wi-Fi service. It's already available in the lower 48. Craig wouldn't release numbers, but he says it's popular.
The social networking sites are very high on the usage list. Search engines are very high on the usage list. There is a fair amount of video download that goes on, so sites like Hulu or Netflix or something. But the predominant usage of it is general web surfing and email.
Text chats are allowed, but voice conversation programs are not. Alaska Airlines is providing in-state service free through December 9th. After that, it will be $4.95 a flight. The Wi-Fi service cuts out over British Columbia between Ketchikan and Washington State. Craig says AirCell is working with a Canadian company to bridge that gap. But the airline is not actively pursuing expansion along western or northern routes.
Certainly, we hope the service is looked kindly upon and used a lot by customers. And should that be the case, then I think there would be a compelling argument to look at expanding it. But right now, we've completed the network expansion that we had set out to do.
That means no service on flights to Kodiak, Kotzebue, Bethel, or Barrow. Wi-Fi is only available once planes hit 10,000 feet. I'm Ed Schoenfeld in Sitka.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. The Federal Aviation Administration sets rules for the operation of aircraft and airports and provides services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska, and when passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. There's more information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska or toll-free at 1-866-357-4704. This message is sponsored by the FAA.
The Department of Fish and Game released its climate change strategy last week. The document comes from the subcabinet created in 2007 by Governor Sarah Palin to study effects of climate change on state resources. KMXT's Jacob Resnick reports.
The climate strategy document lays out in broad strokes what climatologists and biologists have been saying for years, that commercial and subsistence fisheries and wildlife stocks will be strongly affected by a climactic shift that's already warming the globe, especially polar regions. The document predicts that the timing of fish runs and distribution of species could change, requiring the agency to rework its regulations as well as its approach to management and conservation. Doug Vincent Lang is a special assistant to the Fish and Game Commissioner.
It's the first opportunity we've had to kind of take a good comprehensive look at the resources that we manage as an agency and what we anticipate to be some of those major or some of those impacts to those resources might be due to a changing climate. And as just like any other impact that we would see to a species, you know, we're going to start looking at climate change as one of those stressors to a species, and we're going to start figuring out how we're going to develop, you know, how we're going to factor that new stress in as we continue to manage those populations for their long-term sustained health.
The 19-page strategy paper offers little in the way of specifics. About half of the document's surface is color photos, but Vincent Lang says the document is an important first step for the agency to officially recognize its challenges and the need for new research.
Well, there's many challenges that the Department of Fish and Game has in terms of managing resources for their long-term sustained yield. And I think this is the first time we've recognized that a changing climate presents another potential challenge to some of those changes. So this is our first opportunity to identify what some of those possible impacts may be, and it gives us an opportunity to kind of define what we think is needed at this point, which is largely on some new research, so that as we continue to monitor populations, we're not only looking at the typical impacts that we see to those populations, but we also start learning to understand how a changing climate is influencing those populations.
Environmental advocates applaud this first step, but are generally underwhelmed by its vagueness.
It's a good start, but I'm hoping that they will increase their pace and start to really address these concerns.
That's Sue Mager, a fisheries scientist with Cook Inlet Keeper, a not-for-profit group in Homer. She's been monitoring the effects of climate change on salmon streams around Cook Inlet.
We already know that we have warming stream temperatures. We already have the sense of where our data gaps are. So the document doesn't really move us forward very quickly to actually accomplish the types of research that we need to do.
She says Fish and Game is occupied managing specific ecosystems, but historically fails to see the big picture when dealing with something as complex as climate change.
Fish and Game is such a huge department that each individual biologist is working on a very narrow focus. And although they may personally feel like climate change needs to be addressed, it hasn't really been articulated for the whole department. So the document at least does that, but it doesn't really address how those individual biologists will specifically address climate change impacts in their own work. And I think there's still a long way to go before we see new research coming out or a real shift in the way Fish and Game does their work.
To critics who say the document is lightweight, Vincent Lang says the strategy is just the first step and more specific plans will follow.
First off, we've taken an opportunity to kind of look across the spectrum of species that we manage and uses that we manage, and we've now had an opportunity to kind of inventory what are some of those most likely impacts that we begin to see. How we're going to specifically tactically address those, we haven't yet decided.
Vincent Lang said a master document produced by the subcabinet that will look at the state as a whole would be forthcoming next year or maybe the year after. I'm Jacob Resnick.
Skagway could be the next non-smoking town, joining the likes of Whitehorse, Juneau, Haines, and Petersburg if the Assembly votes yes on the idea. The borough is in the process of drafting an ordinance that would outlaw smoking in public places within the municipality's borders. Tara Bicknell has more from Skagway.
Skagway residents want more input on a proposed no-smoking ordinance before it's introduced to the Assembly in January. Last month, the town's Health, Education, and Welfare Committee recommended the law to the Assembly.
Well, I guess I've just gotten to the point where I think it's really affecting us.
Assemblywoman Colette Hisman is the chair of that group. Assemblyman Tim Cochran also sits on the Health Committee, which seeks resident input as it drafts a no-smoking ordinance that'll appear on the January 6th Assembly agenda for introduction.
It's an emotional issue. It's there's a lot of passion on each side.
The ordinance, as it looks now, is based on several other enacted rules, like those in Anchorage and Haines. But unlike many other locations, Skagway is not sending the decision to the voters. At this point, it'll be up to the Borough Assembly to decide if the habit will be illegal in most indoor spaces and some outdoor space. However, the extent of the possible prohibition is still up for discussion. A series of public meetings began the second week of December with residents and business owners speaking for and against the idea. They also offered suggestions for how the ordinance could be written to best fit Skagway.
It's a safety hazard. We have boardwalks and we have turn-of-the-century buildings. It's all dry wood. And we've had several fires in the boardwalk or some of the buildings because someone was careless with a cigarette.
No smoking signs wouldn't be new to the gateway to the Klondike. Some businesses have decided on their own to discourage smoking under their roofs. The Red Onion Saloon is one of them and went non-smoking about 5 years ago. Owner Jan Rentmore says she hopes the borough passes the law so other businesses go smoke-free too.
I was afraid that sales would fall off. The employees were worried about their tips. And in the end, it worked out really well for us. And our evenings are still very strong. People stand outside and smoke, and I regret not having done it sooner.
But at least two assembly members, including Cochran, say they cannot support the ordinance because it gives the borough too much control over private business.
I have a problem with government going in and legislating a private owner of a private company to say he can or can't do something in the on his own property. Now, if it's a public area, by all means, that should be non-smoking.
Other residents and borough representatives are worried about the burden of enforcing a law that could incriminate people for lighting up. A big job for a tiny town that's also a major cruise ship port.
5,000 to 10,000 people milling around in those first 4 or 5 blocks of Broadway. We have 4 policemen. Local people could say, hey, you need to put that out, and you'll probably get a stare at, like, who are you?
Skagway would, however, be following in the footsteps of several other cruise ship ports in Southeast Alaska if they choose to enact the proposed law. Reporting from Skagway, I'm Tara Bicknell.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at aprn.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Alexandra Gutierrez in Unalaska, Len Anderson in Anchorage, Shane Iverson in Bethel, Ed Schoenfeld in Sitka, Jacob Resnick in Kodiak, and Tara Bicknell in Haines. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Dave Donaldson from Juneau. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by NEA Alaska, promoting excellence in public education for Alaskan children through investment in education professionals. Online at neaalaska.org. And by
AT&T, rethink possible. Details at att.com/Alaska or 1-800-252-7266.
The University of Alaska now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. Begin your UAF Fisheries degree at any major University of Alaska campus and finish in Fairbanks or Juneau. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.